Did you hear about that?
You don't believe that, do you?
Did Pope Pius XII help Hitler?
The Pope didn't help Hitler.
I read a book that said so.
You don't believe that, do you?
How can a man be infallible?
Does that mean the Pope is perfect?
Is that true?
What about the Spanish Inquisition?
Well, I heard that Peter never went to Rome.
Our teacher told us.
I saw it on television.
Is that true?
Pope fiction. Fiction.
With your host, Patrick Madrid.
Someone told me that they thought the Pope was the Antichrist, that the numbers in his title in Latin add up to 666 in Roman numerals.
Hello, I'm Patrick Madrid, publisher of Envoy Magazine and the author of the book Pope Fiction. In Pope Fiction, the TV series, we're examining and responding to many of today's common myths and misconceptions about the papacy. These next two myths about the papacy are fairly common in some circles and are often raised in anti-Catholic books and tracts. Sometimes you'll even hear them raised on the radio. Here's the first myth. The Pope is the beast spoken of in Revelation 13. Verse 1 says that he wears crowns and has blasphemous names written on his head. Verse 18 says that the numerical value of his name adds up to 666. The Pope's official title in Latin is Vicarius Filii Dei, which means Vicar of the Son of God. So if you add that up using Roman numerals, you get 666. The Pope's tiara, the myth goes on, is emblazoned with this title, formed by diamonds and other jewels. That's the myth, so you can get the picture now. The beast of Revelation is identified as having a numerical value to his name, and it's argued that this title for the Pope, Vicarius Filii Dei, adds up to 666. And they claim also that the Pope's tiara, or that crown, the metal crown that popes have worn for about the last 1,000 years, has written across the front of it in jewels 666, or in some other variations of this Pope fiction, that it is written out Vicarius Filii Dei, which adds up to 666. Now, here's how we answer that. I myself wasn't very good at math in school, but even I can follow this argument well enough and know the numbers and how they run well enough to show that it's not true. This is what I call apologetics at its most fun, because you can take a charge that's very common against the papacy and then and there, speaking to the person, show him that it's not true. The Pope is not the beast of Revelation, and he does not have a title that adds up to 666. Although this argument is very common and popular with certain groups, for example, the Seventh-day Adventist Church, it's also repeated widely in some Protestant circles. Vicarius Filii Dei, we have to admit, does have the mathematical value of 666 in Latin. So it is a title that does add up to 666. Here's how it works. Like many ancient languages, such as Greek and Hebrew, some Latin letters are also used for numbers. And all of us know the Latin numbers and how they work. For example, the letter I is 1, V is 5, X is 10, L is 50, C stands for 100, D stands for 500, and M stands for 1,000. Those are Roman numerals. The letter U is rendered as a V, and the letter W, which didn't exist in the Latin alphabet, would be rendered as two Vs. So this title, Vicarius Filii Dei, in Latin, would be calculated this way. You would take the value of the word, the value of the letters in the words that don't have numerical value and ignore them, and you would drop out these letters, for example, taking my name, and here's what you would come up with. If you spelled out Patrick Madrid, you would come up with 2,102. The I equals 100, the M equals 1,000, D is 500, another I is 1, another D is 500, and you come up to 2,102. And this, by the way, I think is the reason why so far, at least as far as I know, nobody has accused me yet of being in league with the Antichrist. The numbers in my name just don't add up. But in the case of Vicarius Filii Dei, they do add up to 666. So if you isolate the numbers, this is what you get. You see that the numbers come out to 666 after you drop out the no-value numbers. And that's really the first place to start in answering this Pope fiction. But there are problems with this. The first problem is that Vicarius Filii Dei, or Vicar of the Son of God, is not now, nor has it ever been, an official title used by the Bishop of Rome. The second problem is that virtually no one, including many unsuspecting Catholics, realizes that this papal title is actually a fabrication. To an untrained ear, it sounds enough like one of the Pope's real titles, Vicarius of Christ, in order to pass the test. So if somebody says Vicarius Filii Dei, you may not really hear it very quickly, and it sounds enough like the Pope's actual title that you think it's real. So unfortunately for those who traffic in this particular piece of Pope fiction, the real title, Vicarius Christi, adds up only to a measly 214, not the infernal 666. In fact, none of the Pope's official titles, such as Servus Servorum Dei, which means servant of the servants of God, or Pontifex Maximus, which means supreme pontiff, or Successor Petri, which means the successor of Peter, none of those titles adds up to 666. And that's why you never see any of the Pope's legitimate titles being used by anti-Catholics in their propaganda. So you won't see Servus Servorum Dei in a tract written against the papacy. Why? Because those titles do not add up to 666. Really, they've gotten the wrong name and the wrong number. So if the person who makes the claim to you that the Pope's title equals 666, if that person disagrees with what you're saying, ask him to furnish an example of this alleged title, Vicarius Filii Dei, being used by a Pope officially in some official Catholic document. Now, you won't find it. The person won't be able to locate this example because in papal decrees, conciliar statements, or other authentic official Catholic documents in which the Pope writes or in some ways is a signatory to, he never is called, and he never calls himself, the Vicar of the Son of God. There are no examples of this, although you will find many examples of the official titles of the Pope being used all over the place. Now, we should also add that it's true that over the course of the last 2,000 years of Catholic history, there are some examples that exist of popes being described as the Vicar of the Son of God. And some of these examples appear in documents that could be called official, I suppose you could say that. But we're not claiming that popes have not been, at one time or another, described that way. Because after all, it's perfectly accurate, it's perfectly correct and theologically precise to say that the Pope is the Vicar of the Son of God. He is the Vicar of Christ, and Christ is the Son of God. But the issue at hand here is that Vicarius Filii Dei has never been a name. It has never been an official title of the Pope, and that's what is so important for the argument in order for it to work. For the Pope fiction to be effective, this must actually be a real name or a title. Seventh-day Adventists, for example, in particular, will try very hard to prove that that's true. So a lot of times you'll find tracts, prophecy seminars, you may find internet websites that go to great lengths to convince people that Vicarius Filii Dei is a direct fulfillment of what's spoken about the beast in Revelation 13. Some people have even tried to compile a list of alleged historical examples of Vicarius Filii Dei being used as a papal title. One of the most curious incidents that I've run into, is a very imaginative one, is the charge that in the Pope's own book, Crossing the Threshold of Hope, in the first chapter, on page 3, that he says that the Pope is considered the man on earth who represents the Son of God, who takes the place of the second person of the omnipotent God of the Trinity. Now, a gentleman, a non-Catholic gentleman, recently wrote me about this, and he assured me that if I translated this sentence that I just read you directly into Latin, that I would get Vicarius Filii Dei, Vicar of the Son of God. Unfortunately, if only this gentleman's Latin were as good as his imagination, because in fact the phrase represents the Son of God, which appeared in the book, if you translate that directly into Latin, it yields Filium Dei Representat, not Vicarius Filii Dei. I guess it'd be enough to point out that the word represents is a verb and vicar is a noun. But we don't need to belabor that point. The fact is, in that book, Crossing the Threshold of Hope, A, it wasn't the Pope speaking at all. That section that's quoted was the interviewer who was posing a question to the Pope, and he happened to use this phraseology. It wasn't the Pope saying that. And B, in the actual translation of those words, it doesn't come out to Vicarius Filii Dei. So we can dispense with that argument. Sometimes, an argument that is couched in an appeal to Latin or Greek, like the one above, can appear very formidable, especially to Catholics with no familiarity with these languages. But as we can see, invariably, these arguments don't work out. But there are some examples of Vicarius Filii Dei that can be dredged up from 20 centuries of Catholic history. For example, in the Decretum of Gratian and the Corpus of Canon Law, these are two examples, ancient examples, granted, but they're most often cited by people who are pushing this particular Pope fiction that the Pope is equated with the beast of Revelation. Perhaps the best known example of a book that details this argument is called The Prophecies of Daniel and the Revelation, written by a Seventh-day Adventist author named Uriah Smith. Unfortunately for his argument, there's a lot less there than meets the eye. Mr. Smith clearly had a great time with the history books, trying to find a lot of examples of Vicarius Filii Dei. Unfortunately, we have to disappoint him and those who buy into this line of reasoning. For one thing, those examples of Vicarius Filii Dei that are often cited from the Decretum and the Corpus of Canon Law are actually drawn from the so-called Donation of Constantine, which was a famous forgery. And if those who are familiar with medieval history happen to glance into this, they'll immediately recognize the donation as a forgery of an ecclesiastical document. So that document, as such, cannot be, by any stretch of the imagination, regarded as an official Catholic document. Another historical document that's sometimes cited by people who are promoting the Vicarius Filii Dei myth is the book Prompta Bibliotheca by a Franciscan friar, Lucius Ferraris. And in this, he also lists this title in question, but not as a title. He simply refers to Vicarius Filii Dei as a description of the role of the Pope. And this, of course, is something that he drew from the Donation of Constantine. Apparently, Father Ferraris wasn't aware back when he was writing many hundreds of years ago that that was a forgery. But it is, so we would disqualify that. The second problem with this Donation of Constantine document idea is that even if it were true, even if it were actually a legitimate document, we would have to recognize also that it's not an official Catholic document. It was a civil document that would be coming out of Imperial Rome. So those who have trawled carefully through the classic Catholic Encyclopedia and other documents looking for examples of this, they're going to be disappointed because Vicarius Filii Dei, although it does appear in some of those forged documents, they can't be regarded as authentic. Now, there are some who will push this point who don't bother to read in the very same encyclopedia article that they sometimes get information about Father Ferraris's Prompta Bibliotheca. In the very same encyclopedia, we have the article called The Pope, Primacy of Honor, Titles, and Insignia. And under that subsection, where it gets into the official titles of the Pope, the phrase Vicarius Filii Dei is nowhere to be found. It isn't now, it has never been an official title of the Pope. But we shouldn't be surprised that this fact escapes the notice of some people who write books and tracts and articles and fill websites with this kind of argument. Many people make this charge against the papacy without really ever bothering to check the facts. Now, there's another interesting development that sometimes people will point to. It has to do with the Our Sunday Visitor newspaper. And back in the early part of the 20th century, there was, in the 1915 edition of the Our Sunday Visitor newspaper, there was a mention by apparently one of the staffers of the newspaper that the name Vicarius Filii Dei was one of the names of the Pope. So in the newspaper, it claimed that the papal mitre was inscribed with diamonds, the title being Vicarius Filii Dei. Now, I personally got in touch with the president of Our Sunday Visitor about this, and he told me that he personally went through the archives at Our Sunday Visitor's offices, and he could not find that issue. Now, what he theorized was this, that evidently it had been removed from the archives by perhaps the editor, or who knows, and that the error on the part of this staffer who allowed this argument to slip into the paper was caught only after it had slipped into print. And we have to remember that the Catholic Church does not claim infallibility for journalists. So obviously concerned about the blunder being perpetuated, the editor expunged that issue from the archives. Now this is not surprising in that the Catholic Church doesn't teach and doesn't hold that this Vicarius Filii Dei title is a title of the Pope. So it was important that our Sunday visitor take a step to try to remove that. Now, what many people forget is that our Sunday visitor also issued a number of strong disavowals of this issue. They wrote in the newspaper over the years at various times that Vicarius Filii Dei is not a title of the Pope. For example, in the August 3rd, 1941 issue, a reader posed the question about a pamphlet he had read, wondering if the pamphlet, which said that it identified the Pope as the beast and the number 666, wanted to know if that was true. The editor responded, "The question you ask has been answered many times, although not in recent years, in this paper. If we have recourse to the best biblical scholars or exegetes, we find them applying the text from Revelation to Nero, the arch persecutor of Christianity in the first century. To give color to their accusation, enemies of the church publicize something that is not at all true, and that is that the Pope's tiara is inscribed with the words Vicarius Filii Dei, and that if the letters in that title were translated into Roman numerals, the sum would equal 666. But as a matter of fact, the tiara of the Pope bears no inscription whatsoever." So, if critics of the papacy who use this Pope fiction can only point to an obscure and erroneous passage from a Catholic newspaper printed nearly a century ago, this demonstrates even further the fact that Vicarius Filii Dei is not an official title of the Pope. If it were, why would they have to go through all these gyrations to try to find an example of it? If it were an official papal title, examples would be strewn everywhere, as are occurrences of actual papal titles such as Vicarius Christi, Servus Servorum Dei, etc. So in spite of the strenuous efforts at historical sleuthing, the evidence that these papal critics present is really hardly the smoking gun they imagine it to be. Now that part of the question was easy, but some people, especially the ones who really want to prove this argument true, will ignore the evidence, or lack of it, and hold tenaciously to the idea that Vicar of the Son of God, or Vicarius Christi, is an official title of the Pope. And they want to use this to identify the Pope as the beast of Revelation. What else can we say in response to this? Using the same math exercise that we did earlier, where we take the Roman numerals and we look at their value in English, we could point out that the name of the woman who started the Seventh-day Adventist Church, her name is Ellen Gould White, her name also adds up to 666 in Latin. And we, of course, are not saying that she was the beast of Revelation, but it's important that if you run through the numbers of her name, Ellen Gould White, you can show they add up to 666, and then you can ask the person, if he's a Seventh-day Adventist, does this somehow prove that she is connected with the beast of Revelation? The answer is no. And then in the same way, you could say it's also true that this made-up title for the Pope in no way implicates the papacy as being the beast of Revelation. And it's a good bet that if you do that, you'll make some progress with this person. The main fact to impress upon somebody who uses this argument is that a papal title had to be invented, one that could produce the magic number in order to give this argument legs. But we're not quite done cutting it off at the knees. The charge that the Pope is the beast because he wears a crown, Revelation 13, as you remember, says the beast wears a crown with blasphemous names written on his head, that must also be answered. And we can do this one more quickly. Since about the year 708, many popes have worn, at non-liturgical events, a special papal crown called a tiara. But the stylized beehive shape of the crown, it has three diadems that have come to be known as a tiara. This stylized crown has often been worn by popes in ceremonial events. And although it was customary for these tiaras to be encrusted with jewels and precious ornaments, there's no evidence, there's no statue, no painting, no bust, there's no drawing, there's not even a written description of any of these many tiaras that were crafted ever having the name of the Pope or a title of the Pope emblazoned on it. And this is significant, because if there had been medieval or Renaissance popes whose vanity or extravagant lifestyle would prod them to have their tiaras ornamented this way with jewels, it would have been these. We would have found some tiara somewhere. We would have possessed a painting or a statue or some other representation of these tiaras, and we don't find them anywhere. So these things that are produced during the lifetime of these popes that show the tiaras don't show any evidence of these words being written. So we can see that they didn't have these diamonds spelling out the name Vicarius Filii Dei across the front of the tiaras. And one particular anti-Catholic tract that I've seen shows, in fact, a plain metal tiara with Vicarius Filii Dei spelled out across it. The only problem is that it was a drawing. There was no photograph. There's not even a photo of a painting of such a tiara. It had to be drawn, of course, because the 666 papal crown has really only existed in the minds of those who perpetuate this fantasy. Now, the next Pope fiction that we'll examine is similar in its attack on the papacy. It's an effort to show that there is some connection between the Catholic Church and the Antichrist, but it too, is, as we've seen, it will fail when we dig deeper into it. It'll fall apart. Now, this is the charge. In the book of Revelation, the Whore of Babylon, or the harlot, is described as a city that sits on seven hills. We read that in Revelation 17. This seven-hilled city is obviously, the argument goes, the city of Rome, the headquarters of the Roman Catholic Church. So it's clear that the whore is Catholicism. Now, that's the charge. And if you page through some Reformation-era manuscripts and look at some of the woodcuts and engravings that depict the Pope that were done at that time, you'll see that he's very often described or depicted as the Whore of Babylon. So this is actually a very common and fairly old propaganda ploy that was used by some polemicists against the Catholic Church. And this colorful, although inaccurate, argument comes down to our own day. Now, there's no denying the fact that the city of Rome is famous for its seven hills. But as we'll see in a minute, this argument won't pan out. To begin with, this argument makes a huge and unfounded leap. First of all, the Greek word used in Revelation 17 is hore, from oros. And in Scripture, oros almost always means a mountain. You'll see why this detail is important in a minute. Now, I've been to Rome many times, and I've walked its streets hundreds of times, and I know its seven hills rather well. And the fact that stands out in my mind is that these hills are fairly gentle. They really barely qualify as hills. They're certainly not mountains. Now, in 2,000 years of development, you can expect that that's going to have an effect and level out these hills somewhat. But even if you look at depictions of Rome that are hundreds of years old, you'll see that these hills are actually just gentle rises. They're not very large. The second problem with this argument is that the word mountain or hill doesn't have to be understood literally in Revelation 17. Sometimes mountains can symbolize a kingdom, as in Daniel 2, or also in Psalm 68, it symbolizes a kingdom. In Obadiah 8, we see it symbolizing a kingdom. These seven mountains of the Whore of Babylon might in fact be seven kingdoms that she reigns over, or seven kingdoms that she has something in common with. The number seven is symbolic, and it often represents completeness in Scripture. So if it is symbolic in the book of Revelation, then the seven mountains might symbolize that the Whore reigns over all the kingdoms of the earth. And that could be something that would play out when we see how it all develops. I was recently in Cologne, Germany, and one of the people who was with me as we drove through the city pointed out the window and was pointing out the seven hills for which that city is famous. Now, I didn't know that Cologne, Germany was famous for its seven hills, but the local people were certainly very proud of that fact. So the conclusion I drew from this was that just because Rome and other famous cities has been known for being famous for seven hills, it doesn't necessarily mean that Rome is the city being spoken of in Revelation 17. St. John could have also been referring to the city of Jerusalem. It was famous for seven hills, just as Cologne, Germany is. The other thing we have to keep in mind, too, is that there's this very strong effort to identify Vatican City with the Whore of Babylon. And one of the mistakes that people make is they forget that Vatican City is across the Tiber River on Vatican Hill, and the seven hills that the city of Rome is famous for are on the east side of the Tiber River. And those seven hills are not the seven hills that the Vatican is located on. So those people who want very much to bring Vatican City into the argument, they either have not been to Rome or they haven't looked at a map of Rome, because those seven hills are not the seven hills that the Vatican City is sitting on. So, in closing, we can say that this argument also against the papacy, using the analogy of the hills and reading in Revelation 17 details about the Whore of Babylon, that won't pan out also. This is another example of one of those myths and misconceptions against the papacy that really, when you dig into it, it doesn't have any basis. We know that there is a possibility that St. John was speaking about Jerusalem. It's possible, given some of the details that we see in the Apocalypse, that there is a connection with Jerusalem. Well, we've run out of time, and that's our two Pope fictions for today. I do hope that you'll continue to join me in praying for Pope John Paul II and all of the popes, that God will strengthen them and give them good health and protect them. I'm Patrick Madrid, publisher of Envoy Magazine and author of the book Pope Fiction, and I'm wishing you all the best in Christ.